By the mid-1990s, Dick Clark had become one of the rare career civil servants in Washington to rise to the uppermost regions of the policymaking world. He had become an indispensable, if sometimes uncontrollable, figure in the national security apparatus. Clark had become something like a Whitehall Mandarin, one of the demigods of the British civil service, who, in a system with only a handful of political appointees, exercised more influence than any American bureaucrat can aspire to. But in Clark, there was nothing of the hyper-refined snob that the term conjures. In the Clinton administration, Clark was one of only two senior directors kept on from the old regime. He struck up a friendship with Tony Lake, whose respect for him grew early on because of the job Clark did as chairman of the committee coordinating the military and political operations connected to the U.S. presence in Haiti. He infuriated other NSC senior directors by refusing to attend the twice-weekly staff meetings and by sending in bold, red type, email messages that ranged from the merely snide to the blatantly insulting. Clark knew everyone, and to the chagrin of the Joint Chiefs, delighted in working out of channels to call the commanders-in-chief at the Central, Southern, or Special Forces Command when he wanted something done. One Assistant Secretary of Defense put it cogently when he said, "Dick drove the chiefs batshit." It is no exaggeration to say that one person or another at the cabinet or sub-cabinet level, or in the top NSC staff, urged the National Security Advisor to fire Clark almost every month. Among the half-dozen executive assistants who served Tony Lake and Sandy Berger during the two Clinton terms, few sentences were uttered with the same frequency as, "This time, Dick has gone too far." For all the irritation he caused, three qualities distinguished Clark. First, he understood as well as anyone in Washington all the levers and pulleys of foreign policy, from the particular images a specific satellite could provide to what hardware could be transferred to a friendly country without congressional approval, to the mechanics of imposing economic sanctions. No one had a better mastery of the repertoire. Second, he was relentless. Of the top officials who worked with him and recognized his talents, many shook their heads as he overplayed his hand in bureaucratic battles and needlessly alienated people who might have helped him. But even if his abrasiveness did not always lead to the desired results, he delivered considerably more than most. Third, Clark had a preternatural gift for spotting emerging issues as their importance took off. Whether it was terrorism money laundering or protecting computer-driven infrastructure, from airports to stock exchanges, he quickly identified the problem, devised a set of policy options, and took charge. This last skill helped Clark acquire a small bureaucratic empire, and it served the interests of his supervisors, who were eager to stay ahead of the curve of global change.